Canned beer. Canned beer. How do you? I wonder how, as a small brewer, you do canning.
Yeah, you need to look into that.
Yeah. You know what I want to do cans of? I want to do cans that are like cat food size cans of beer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, really small ones.
Uh-huh.
And give them to my cat.
In tech we trust. We're not sure about.
Episode 41, is it, of the In Tech We Trust podcast, and three of us on the show today. Mark, you've got a new job.
I started a new job. Hey. Yes, I started this week. Hey! Yeah, went to Tejal.
Give us the lowdown. Tejal, what are you going to do there?
Yeah, I'm going to be their evangelista.
Oh, yeah?
Evangelista. Hey, now, there you go. They need it, because who is it? They don't have it. Now
they don't have one.
That's
so
right.
It was, yeah, that's exactly right. It's a great fit. You know, they've been doing an interesting thing for several years. You know, they came out as a hybrid storage company, and they last summer they came out with all-flash products. They just need they need someone to be the human megaphone, you know, do a little salt and pepper on their on some of their content, create a little spice out there, and, you know, that's what I like doing, so... There you go. I guess the timing of my dismissal of being laid off from Quadr worked out really well, because Tejal just, you know, we were talking about a few weeks ago, they just raised $70 million.
Uh-huh.
And there you go. I saw that. You know, my eyes got big. I said, hey, buddies.
So that's your price? That's what you need? Mark Farley cost $70 million. Got it.
Exactly. You know, you got to go. You got to go with the flow. So, yeah, I feel really lucky. I mean, I think it's a great fit. A really great fit, so I'm excited as can be.
Hey, Mark, does this mean you're going to be locking horns with Vaughn over at Pure then?
I suppose. Yeah, I mean, why not?
Are you up
I mean,
for that? You think you can take him on?
Yeah, I mean, I'll take on anybody. I bite, you know, I throw acid in people's eyes, you know, I do all kinds of things, and then I smile and hug them, you know, it's social.
Whoa, wait, you know, I've just thought as well.
Gabe!
Exactly, yeah.
I know.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
What are we going to do?
I mean, it's everybody. We're all, I know my old buddy Gabe will probably be spitting on each other during this podcast and, you know, making little cuts on each other, trying to crack each other up, you know, with messages while the other one's
talking.
Well,
it's really clear.
Like,
we can't have you or Gabe do the edit now. Gosh, goodness.
Oh yeah. Or we can both do edits and A, B the podcast
exactly.
To see how different they come out. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think Tejal competes a lot directly with Solid Fire. I might be wrong about that, but I think Solid Fire is selling to a lot larger installations than we typically are.
I see Tejal and Nimble going at it a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think yeah, and I know we run across Pure, and, you know, we'll run across my old buddies at HP. We'll have to get Calvin on the show and we can arm wrestle and stuff, you know. So I think Tejal, Nimble, NetApp, some Pure. You know, you know, I've been there like 3 days. Who do I know what the targets are?
Actually, you left early to take this call, technically, right?
That's right. I haven't actually been there. I've been there 2.5 days, but I've been working early and long. Here we go. There's some really nice things about the campus there where Tejal is. They have a fountain. I think of it as Tejal Fountain. You know, they've got a gym there, so I can go get on an elliptical and work off some of this chub. I mean, there's all kinds of good things about
chub,
it.
Chub. So that's an important point, Mark. You've been saying it correctly the whole time, Tejal. But how many times have you heard Tejal?
Yeah.
And there's so many ways to slice it, but it's Tejal, right?
It's Tejal, but, you know, if you want to call it Tejal, you want to call it Tejili, I don't care, you know, as long as you call it.
They should call it Tejali Fountain. Like,
yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, you know, it helps to have it pronounced correctly, but as long as people know what it is and start clicking over to it and paying attention to content, that's all I care about. It's one of those things. Once you start and you learn a name funny, it's always kind of hard. And that was one that was never obvious.
Like,
so,
VMware Essex?
Yes.
Essex. Yeah.
Or Microsoft Azure or Azure or...
Oh,
what,
God.
Azure.
Yeah.
Azure. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's one of those, you know, it's one of those things. But we're going to, you know, I guess we probably, I might have to start a campaign trying to help people figure out how to pronounce this. There you go. That'll be something to do.
Cool. You know, I just had a conversation with Calvin from HP, I think, today or yesterday, and he was not having a moan, but he was saying, hey, you've been giving HP a bit of a hard time on the podcast. Maybe you need to have me on to come and give their side of the story. Mm. And I'm like, actually, Calvin, right now we don't allow vendors on the podcast. But when I think about it, Rick, you're a vendor. Mark, you're a vendor. Gabe's a vendor. Man.
Yeah.
We're going to need an entirely new crew at this rate.
Well, no. We just set our own rules and, you know, that's how it goes. I do my best when it comes to the vendor bit, and I know Gabe does too. In fact, I think Gabe does a better job than me, Mark did a really good job in his previous role, but it's important for us to
having
really...
Having nothing to have spoken of.
There you go. But you couldn't, right? But I think we on behalf of Gabe and Shirley and Mark, we do our best on this, even though we do work for a brand that sells kit and software. We do our best to be as fair and on the line as possible. At least that's how I roll.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah, except for that one show, Rick. No, other than that. Other than that. I mean, you know, and that's the deals, right? So, you know, going to work for Tejal says, yeah, they know I do this podcast, and, you know, they've got to be, you know, I'm not going to be stumping for them on it. That's great. That's fine. You know, they just want me to go back to work tonight when it's done.
And they're not going to sack you for podcasting on the job, no?
No. Dell was a little weird. Dell would let me. Dell probably would have let me do it, too. But it was just strange. HP was odd that way. HP really didn't like that stuff. And Microsoft, the problem with doing something like this at Microsoft is there are a zillion bodies buried all over the place, and you never know when you're going to step on one. Right.
Yeah, nice.
Any company of any size, especially one like Microsoft,
sure.
You could come out and start saying something without knowing what you're talking about and find out that you've just stepped on a landmine and there's, you know, 5, 10, 15 people just waiting to come and assassinate you for doing it.
Yeah. Hey, comparing Tejal to somebody like Dell or Microsoft or HP or whatever, in your, albeit limited, 3 days at the company or whatever it is at the moment, does it feel like a startup still?
Yes, it does. It feels like a more mature startup, right? It feels like a startup that's got, it's past its early launch stage and giddiness. And it's got the hard work of trying to grow from, you know, being really a relatively small company to being a player in the industry, right? And that's the goal, right? And so, you know, for instance, at Equalogic, you could kind of see this pivot, although I wasn't there the whole time, right? At early stage, you don't really know what your marching orders are, but by this stage in a company, everybody pretty much knows what their marching orders are and they need to execute. It's all about execution at this stage and who's getting the job done. So it's kind of serious. So it doesn't have that small, aren't we great, aren't we lovely kind of thing. And there's some of that, don't get me wrong, but it's a pretty serious business by this point.
300, 500 employees, somewhere in that space?
Oh, no, a couple hundred.
Couple of hundred. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, so it's still small, but you know, Rick, it's not like 30 or 50 or something like that, right?
Okay.
It's not like 25.
Got it. I mean, and global or North America mostly, or?
Mostly North America. A little bit of business starting up in Europe.
Cool.
Mostly here though. I mean, we have to figure out how to make the technology stick in customer accounts here.
Right. Well, it's a good market to start.
Hey, are
it
they?
Is. It's good. Are they hiring in England? No.
I want to work for Amazon. Remember? No.
That's right.
Are they a little bit late to market with an evangelist then? Because, you know, Pure have had this kind of role going for a long time. SolidFire, sort of. I don't know. It feels like Tejal have been around for a while, and if they're only bringing you in now, is that like a cultural thing? Did they not think it was necessary before, or have they admitted? You know, maybe should have done this earlier.
Well, they've had solutions architects, and they've had, you know, people in marketing that have done evangelism type things, but they haven't had anyone that's you know, had a focus like this for, I think, especially for online communications. They've had people that have certainly gone out and spread the message through their partner system and to end users. I think realistically, you look at Tejal, you know, and so we talked before about the fact that people sometimes don't know how to pronounce the name, or people often don't know how to pronounce the name. But there's, in general, there's a recognition issue that they need to address. And so, yeah, you could say it's a little bit late, but I think they found a hell of a good guy to try to figure out how to
Make that happen. Right.
Right. So, you know, I don't think that matters. I don't think you can be behind in technology and you can be behind in market, but being behind in evangelism, I think that's a Band-Aid.
Band-Aid. Hey, in your reporting line, so the people that you report to, your superiors, have they managed proper evangelists like yourself before, or is this something new to them? You know, are they going to deal with, are we to expect videos and cartoon drawings and stuff that we've had from you in the past?
Yeah, pretty much carte blanche to do the kinds of stuff that I like to do, as long as I get it done, right? I mean, some of the stuff that I've done in the past has taken a long time to develop.
Oh, yeah.
But I know how to do some of them now, right? I mean, the cartoons, the chalkboards and those kinds of things.
Dashboard really, video! Dash cam! Yeah,
we're going to do more dash cam. I don't know. That's kind of been done before, but I know there's some expectation. People would like to see more of that. I'll just have to figure out, you know, what the next version of that would be.
So, you know, Mark, I've got a kind of a serious question on this, right? Because that's my role, effectively, as well as an evangelist. But, you know, as an organization, where do you report? You know, do you report to the marketing? Are you, you know, engineer, right, to the CEO? How do you organizationally fall?
Well, you know, I think I've talked about it before. I like to report to no one, but I do report to the VP of marketing.
Right? Got it.
I prefer no one. But, you know, I reported the VP of marketing, Rob Commons.
Okay, that's similar. I'm in the CMO organization myself, chief marketing officer. I was just curious because before we had a CMO, we were just a little side project of the CEO. But I'm just curious how it fell organizationally.
Yeah, I don't know. I think if they were smart, they'd have me report to building maintenance. But.
Hey, so do you need to have hooks into, like, the engineering group and stuff like that?
Yeah, absolutely. You have to. You have to be able to go out and find out how the stuff works, right? If you can't find out how the stuff works and what it's built to do and what it can't do, then you don't know what to say.
Exactly. You have to be able to have the conversation at any level, and that's the hard part of the evangelist role. Myself, in fact, I'm mentoring a new evangelist this week myself, but you know, you could be talking to someone who is more technical than you, but you have to be able to hold the conversation there for the area of your product that matters to them. And then the next day or the next tweet even can be an analyst or press or something, and they might not need as much detail, but you don't know until you have to do it in terms of the preparation, but being able to have that conversation at all levels, that's really tough. So, Mark, when this whole IT thing's over, you and me are going to write a book called Evangelist, and we'll talk about it.
Okay, but I want to call it Evangelistas.
Evangelistas.
And can I do the audible version? Yeah, my British accent.
Yeah, cool. For the global edition. Yeah.
The Brit edition.
Yeah. Hey, Mark, you said it's got a gym. Does it have its own brewery or distillery in there for you? You know, are you also the brewmaster at Tejal now?
You know what? I think I am the brewmaster at Tejal now, but I haven't seen a place that's suitable for brewing. But I am the brewmaster, and I, you know, I've got some beer things up my sleeve for the new job because, you know, I told them, you know, hey, I like beer. I like talking about beer. So, you know, we'll be doing a little beer series there at Tejal. That'll be fun. Tejal.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Tejal. I want to buy a six-pack. That's awesome. Tejal.
Tejal. We'll be doing a little Tejal action.
Or Tej IPA.
Yeah, well, yeah, IPA's an A. Yeah, we'll be having some of that. That'll be fun.
Congratulations on the new job, Mark. There you go.
Yeah, hey, thanks. Yeah, we spent enough time talking about that.
It's all good stuff. Rick, you got anything going on at the moment?
Nothing significant going on. I mean, friends, listeners, I apologize for missing last week, or it was a cracking episode, but I just completed literally nearly a month of travel, and I'm so excited. You guys don't even know. Between now and actually VMworld at the end of August, I only have 2 days in August, 2 days in July that I'm traveling for work. I'm so excited to be home for the summer. Yeah. Hey now.
Yeah. Hey, do get those honeydews done.
That's
fix that roof.
There is a list. You got
dig that new basement.
Right, but you know, it's kind of funny because really in the last 3 weeks, minus the total of a week that I was home, California twice, Atlanta, Orlando, Rome, and Russia. Man, it was just tough.
That is brutal.
It was brutal. So I'm glad to be home, but I've been kind of off the grid, as it were, for a bit. But happy to be home. And honestly, it's kind of a quiet time. We'll talk about DockerCon here in a second. You know, there's a little bit of a lull in terms of major industry events, and doesn't necessarily correlate to news, but hopefully we can focus on things a bit for the summer, and it'll get busy in the middle of the late summer, early fall, and then it gets quiet again for me. But yeah, hanging in there for sure.
Cool.
Well, I'm glad you're going to be able to put your feet up just a little bit, Rick.
Not much, but at least I'll do it at home.
You're right. Yeah. You got a hammock going for the summer? You got a place to swing outside in the breeze, look at the fireflies and stuff?
Okay, funny story. So the craziest thing I'm doing is I am the assistant coach of my daughter's tennis team. There are 48 fourth, fifth, and sixth graders that I am teaching tennis to. This is very fun for me, by the way. And I'm responsible for about six kids, the way they divide it out. That's what I'm doing to quote unquote relax. So wish me luck, friends. We had our first one 2 days ago, and it was actually a lot more fun than I thought. But that's the fun bit that I've put in for the summer.
How old are they, Rick?
So let's see, 7, 8, 9, that era.
Oh, yeah?
Good kids, good age. They're mobile. They've got the good coordination. As far as the listening, well, that's what we need to work on.
Yeah, listening's not going to be their strong point.
No.
But, you know, I can see you having almost an infinite amount of patience with them.
I am very patient with kids.
No, I bet you are.
And, you know, and Mark is an evangelist. That's a skill that is very important, you know, because you have to be patient for situations that don't develop in the fashion or at the speed you want. So I'm actually doing good as this air quote coach. You know, there's a lot of coaches, but I've got six kids on my block of sorts. But, you know, it's working well so far for me. They didn't kick me out, I guess. That's the real important part.
That should be great. So have you played tennis before?
Oh, here's a fact. The Rickatron is 1-0, undefeated in Ohio high school tennis play. That's right.
Ohio, you had a match.
That's right. The one time I made varsity because the other guy couldn't make it, we won.
Does that mean you lost a doubles partner? Or
No. I was in playing in doubles and I won. I wasn't good. I was a lineman. I was a football player. I only played tennis to, you know, work on my footwork, right, my speed. But I got to play tennis one time in high school and I won. So I'm undefeated, right? That's my claim to fame. But I'm actually okay with the tennis racket. The Rickatron can play.
Yeah, I bet you're also pretty good with like a paddle ball, you know, with the ball and the rubber
actually,
band and
not
that
at
stuff,
all.
You know?
Not at all. I'm much better with backup media. Yeah, keep me in the data center.
Okay. Well, I just picture you as being a supreme paddle baller also.
Like Forrest,
or whatever they call that thing, paddleball. That's like racquetball or something.
No,
right?
Keep me on a tennis court.
I got this wrong.
Tennis court. What's up with you, Mr. Nigel?
Yeah, what's up? How's your house? Where? I mean, you got cows living with you, or what? No.
Yeah, we do. We have cows out the back, and broadband it sucks. You know what? As well, because I record these courses for Pluralsight, so in the office it kind of needs to be quiet and stuff. And yeah, we're out in the country, but we've got this busy road out the front of the house. And any time a lorry goes past, I've only started noticing when I'm in the office, like the house shakes. And
yeah. What's a lorry?
Like a truck, a semi. Yeah.
Okay. Carry on.
So my office used to be a bedroom for the previous owners, right? And it's got this mirror hung up on the wall, and the mirror rattles whenever one of these trucks goes past the house. I'm like, I don't know if that's good for the long-term stability of the foundations and stuff like that, but it's going well. You know, I just had a new course released on Pluralsight, learning to program in Go, which was really cool to do. But aside from work, right, I just finished reading a book. I don't know if either of you guys have read it. It's like a classic sci-fi book from the 60s called Stranger in a Strange Land.
Oh, yeah, Robert Heinlein.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
that is a classic.
Oh, it was
excellent.
Great. So I read it on a recommendation from Chris Evans, because I used the term, not like
grok?
A massive amount, right? But yeah, I used the term grok.
Yeah, grok comes from there.
Yeah, and I had no idea of that. And that's kind of a bit embarrassing for me that I'm using this term that I've heard other techie geeks use, and I kind of grok what it means, right? But I'd never read the book. And Chris is like, he pulled me up on it at Enrico Signoretti's Tech Unplug event, because I'd said in my talk there that I'd grokked something, and I was going to say, and I almost grokked my wife, and I thought, that might sound not so good.
That's a family show. You got to be careful there. Yeah.
And he's like, hey, so you've read Stranger in a Strange Land? And I'm like, no. It's like, well, that's where grok comes from. I thought, oh, there you go. Got to read that. Great book, though. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, so actually, if you were to say you grokked your wife, it just meant that you were listening to her.
Yeah.
And there's two parts of that. The one is that there's nothing dirty about it, and the other one is that husbands usually don't do that.
No, that's totally true. Yeah. So what I was going to be saying is, you know, I was saying I'd had this like moment of just like this moment of epiphany when I grokked Docker, and I said I was going to say, because I was saying, oh, and I could see the beginning of time and the end of time. It's just like I had this epiphany, and I even grokked my wife, as in I even understood my wife. But I thought, if you don't know what grok means, that could sound like I took her upstairs and I, we don't need to go there.
Well, just let the audience worry about that. Now you do know what it means, though. And it's a brilliant book and really worth reading. It's a classic. So you would be like our grokker docker. Or Docker Grokker, rather. You'd be our Docker Grokker.
Yeah.
That's kind of your role. Hey, so what do you do? What's your business about these days anyway right now, Nigel? How do you have time to read like old sci-fi anyway?
Yeah, so I don't read. I listen. So I've got this like Uber account on Audible where I pay like, I can't remember what it was, 100 quid, and I get 24 books. And then once I'm through 24, it auto-renews, takes another 100 quid off me, and I get another 24 books. So anytime I'm in the car or I'm on a train or I'm doing the dishes or I'm in the gym or anything like that, I'm listening to books. And I listen to like a variety of books. So sci-fi books I really like, but then I'll read serious books as well. So like biographies and things like that. But at the moment, I just finished Stranger in a Strange Land, and I started a new book called Starplex. Again, another recommendation from Chris Evans. So, but I'm not far into that one. Seems pretty good at the moment, though. But I love listening to books whenever I've got free time.
So for what it's worth, Chris was out here last week, and we went out for a beer night. You know, I usually have a beer report somewhere in this show. And let's see, what was I? I'm trying to remember the name of the wine bar that's on. Oh, gosh. Now I'm not going to be able to remember everything. A wine bar, but they also have a beer. And it seems that every time I get together with Chris, it's just a little bit more alcohol consumption than
Chris
I had
Evans?
Planned. Yes, Chris Evans. Yeah. Just a tiny bit more than I had planned for. And then the next day is wobbly.
I've got a beer report, if we'd like.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So all I was going to say is that Chris came and I held out and I, even though we were out commercially drinking beer, I did give him a couple porters. Or we did split a porter. Well, we were up on the berm overlooking the south end of San Francisco Bay by Milpitas, up north of McCarthy Ranch there, if people know it. You get some good bird viewing and sometimes animal viewing and stuff like that. Anyway, he did say that he liked the porter, but I really need to have him on the show so he could actually say that. So one of my beers turned out well anyway, one out of six or something.
That's pretty good.
So that was fun. It was nice to be able to share a beer with Chris all the way from the UK.
By the way, I'm convinced, guys, canned beer, okay, from the microbreweries. Bottles, I'm convinced, bottles don't capture the flavor as well. I'm down with the can.
Very interesting. What canned beer are you having?
Tonight it's Rheingeist. It's from Cincinnati, Ohio, Rheingeist. Mm-hmm. And I've tried a few of them. Really good. I mean, and same with Stella Artois, by the way. If anybody, that's a better example. If you've done Stella from the bottle, Stella from the can, Stella from the can feels like draft. I mean, it tastes like draft. It leaves the lines like draft. So I'm down with cans from now on.
Oh.
That's just my observation.
Cool.
Wow. I just wouldn't have known.
Do a comparison. I did a comparative review, and you can find this on the Ricotron blog. Stella in the can versus Stella in the bottle.
Yeah,
you can see. I drank all of both, but hey, it was a good blog.
Well, cans have other advantages too. You know, like you can shoot them, right? If you want,
that's true.
You can do the whole thing of, you know, puncturing a hole in the bottom and then sucking air out and then holding it up and opening the top and having it all rush through your throat in a very short period of time. You can't do that with a bottle.
That's true.
It's hard to get it all out of the bottle.
So that's what you need for Christmas, Mark, if you don't already have it. You need a cannery, if that's even what it's called, in your basement.
That's what it's called, yeah, a cannery.
Yeah, so you can start canning your beers, right, for that better, fuller flavor that Rick's talking about. And then next time Chris is over, not only give him the experience of your own home brew, take him out in the backyard and give him the American shooting experience as well. Go, like, shoot some bullets through some cans as well.
It's not only American, Nigel.
What's that?
The shooting experience is not only.
All right, there. No. I get that, but you know, it's not a British thing. And when we go over there, we tend to get excited if we see a gun and like, ooh, can I shoot that? So yeah.
What I was surprised to hear from Chris, speaking of differences between what's across the pond, he said that most of the beer you get these days in pubs in the UK is not very interesting and not very good. It's very kind of vanilla ale, but you might not be a big beer drinker.
No.
I was really surprised to hear him say it. He was kind of railing on it. He said, we just can't get any good beer anymore here. It's all this, the same boring stuff.
That is interesting, actually, because I do know, years ago, we used to like American beers. Pfft, what?
Yeah,
would
I know.
Never drink such a thing. There you go.
I guess we discovered yeast and I guess hops. We discovered hops over here.
Well, it's a craft beer renaissance revival. And it's really changed everything. I mean, and I travel the world, and I know, Nigel, you don't really fancy beer, and Mark, you know. But what I found is, like, around the world, you go to a restaurant or a pub, chances are they have one beer on draft and then maybe some bottles. Here, premier places make a big effort to have the full offering, and I always try the local or the different beer because that's really a taste of something new, and I found that to be very effective. So craft beer has become kind of an important thing here, and I know I like it.
Yeah, I'm going to have to come up to Columbus and do a tour with you. That's what we need to do with In Tech We Trust. We need to do an In Tech We Trust beer tour.
Speaking of which, in the Netherlands, Nigel.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Before we move on to the tech news then. Yeah. So our good friend Enrico Signoretti's got his second Tech Unplugged event in Amsterdam on the 24th of September.
Whoa, yeah.
Hey now.
And you're going to be there, aren't you, Rick?
Enrico.
That's right. I'm there for work, actually. I will be there.
So you guys one of the sponsors then?
That's correct. We did secure a sponsorship from Veeam. Yep.
Oh, Mark, you were snoozing on that one, man. You should have had Tejan in there.
Are there still sponsorships available?
Ask Enrico.
Ask Enrico. Yeah.
We'll find out.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'm pretty stoked about the event because the last one was really good, at least from my perspective. So I presented there and I was on a panel, but I got to speak to a ton of different people that were just in the audience. Yeah. Talking to them about technology and stuff, and I love to talk about technology, but got talking to people about the podcast and stuff as well. And I think since you're going to be there, Rick, we'll definitely do a live recording of the podcast.
Oh, I got to figure out how to go too.
Yeah, we'll make it happen, guys.
Well, I'll tell you what as well, Chris Wall's going to be there, and Chris is one of my favorite tech speakers and tech bloggers and tech writers. So I did say to Enrico when he's putting the schedule together, because he's going to run a couple of tracks side by side, I said, whatever you do, Enrico, do not line me up in the same time slot as Chris Wall, because not only would nobody come and listen to me, they'd all go and listen to him, but I want to go and listen to him as well. I think Chris is great. So I think it's going to be a great event.
Yeah, he's fantastic. People would go to listen to you too, but maybe they would get a clone of themselves or find a doppelganger. Hey, who's in Nigel's audience? It looks like people I know, but they're all a little different.
Yeah.
I got the doppelganger audience. I know I wouldn't want to be up against Chris either because he's a dynamic speaker and knows his stuff. But Nigel, you know your stuff too.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a good event. I'm looking forward to it. Anyway, I do think we need to talk about some tech news. So should we move on?
Yeah, but I'm tweeting Enrico right now to see if he's got sponsorships. So.
You can do two things at once, right? So anyway.
Yeah, keep going.
While you're tweeting, Mark, on the tech news from the week, there's tons of stuff come out of DockerCon, right? I could probably talk till the cows come home about that. A minor thing, well, I don't know, actually. So Google Cloud Platform suffered 3 brownouts. I guess I should probably have a definition of that, right? But they suffered 3 brownouts in one day last week. Didn't really make big news. I don't know if anybody noticed, and whether or not that's a representation of where Google Cloud Platform is in comparison to the likes of Azure and AWS. But finally, NetApp seems to be at last entering the all-flash array race with no less than 3 product lines. First up on DockerCon, all right, there's tons of stuff come out from there. But the one big one for me was they are forming something called the Open Container Project, right? So kind of a standards, I don't want to call it a standards body, but they're aiming to standardize the container runtime. And it looks to me a little bit like they're going to be taking all of the value out of the container runtime. So think of the container runtime as like the hypervisor, right? And basically saying, well, instead of there being this proprietary Docker container runtime and a proprietary Rocket container runtime from the guys at CoreOS, we'll just standardize everything. And Docker can do their own implementation of it. Rocket can, anybody else can. But at the end of the day, it's all going to be standardized. And we're going to put all of the value in things like the orchestration. Now, kind of makes sense, right? Because that sort of thing's been happening in the virtualization space. So we've talked a lot about the hypervisor is pretty much commodity these days. All the value's in the higher level orchestration, all that kind of jazz. Cool, right? But what does it do for Docker as a company is the big question that I've got. Because I know when they took in their last round of funding, which I think was like to the tune of about $95 million. Yeah, and they were valued at something like around about $1 billion. And we've talked loads in the past, haven't we, about how hard is it to make money out of an open source project, so to speak. And now we're saying, well, potentially the actual core Docker engine or just the runtime itself, no value in that. It's all commodity and all the value is up in the orchestration. But there's so much competition in the orchestration space, and Docker have kind of had this approach in the past, at least, of saying, well, we're the container runtime and the engine, and we'll include orchestration tools, but it's batteries included, but removable approach. It's like, we're not aiming to be the most scalable or the most robust or the most flexible. We're just, you know, we'll include it. And you can use it if you want to, but if you want to use something that's more like scalable and more, dare I say, enterprise, go and use something from the third party. Well, what does that do for them as a company if the only place for them getting value now is in the orchestration? And I don't know, it's...
I'm sure they've thought through this, Nigel. I'm sure they've been down this path and looked at it, right? For starters, they've got plenty of money.
Yeah, they do.
So they can change their approach if they want. And, you know, to your point, they looked at how this stuff has come about in the past, who's making any money off Linux and how do they do it? You know, you could say Red Hat, how do they do it? Well, support and all the stuff that they add on top of it. So my guess is they're looking at a Red Hat type of model here. And they know that they're probably better off having the market grow quickly by, you know, taking the profit out of the, I don't even know what you call it. What do you call it? The container.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm. So they want containers to be used as broadly as possible, and so then they're in a race. They're in an arms race to come up with the orchestration and management tools and all of that kind of stuff. But they've got a wealth of expertise, and they've probably got customers. And okay, so we're going to race to something else that's a little different now. But the first race is just about over. And if there's not that much value in it, you know, actually, maybe the first race isn't over, but they want to make it over. They just want to call it.
Yeah.
Right. Take that away and change the vector that their industry is going on, you know, to something that they're very comfortable with and know very well and can see a lot of value in. They can't be doing this on a whim.
They've got a lot of big, big name friends that are behind that. I'm reading the press release, you know, right now. And, you know, you've got Cisco, you've got EMC, Fujitsu, Google, HP, Huawei, Red Hat, and VMware, all kind of, you know, having a seat at the table kind of endorsing this this news. And I think that, you know, in the scheme of things, this is 1.0.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They might be already thinking of the next thing and getting that open framework that basically requires you to use containers and the orchestration, whatever part that the friends are going to really create those standards for the open management. I think that that really is paving the way for an addressable customer base. So I think that this is very much a calculated decision, to Mark's point.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm looking at this graphic here, right? It's Amazon, Apsara, Cisco, CoreOS, Docker, EMC, Fujitsu, Goldman Sachs. What are they doing there? Google.
They got the money.
Yeah,
right.
They're like HP, the only Huawei, non-tech IBM. Company, though. Yeah.
I mean, these are Intel giant, MesOS, well, Microsoft, Pivotal, Rancher, Red Hat, VMware. I mean, there are some very scary competitors, potential competitors to them in there. Both for, both potentially for containers as well as for infrastructure pieces. But my guess is this puts them in a great position for a high-value acquisition.
Oh, really?
There you go. That's the next big thing. Right. They're going to make this technology that they all have built crap around. So what's the value? Here it is, guys. This is like Uber, like Airbnb. This is a company that doesn't really own anything. They just have a service. Uber has no cars. Airbnb has no properties, but they're so valuable. Docker has really just a framework that they're going to have some value around. I think you're exactly right, Mark.
Yeah, I don't know.
I wonder if I'm like old-fashioned in being kind of scared at thoughts like that. It feels like almost, this is probably not the right analogy, but the Emperor's New Clothes. Like, if you don't own anything, how can you be of such value? Do you know what I mean? Does that resonate with anybody?
It's a race, is what it is.
And it works today.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's not about what you have as much as it is about how fast can you build it.
Right. And you know what? Right. So Docker is just growing as a project and as a community, just at like such a rapid clip. It's just insane. Okay. I think I saw something the other day. It's had like 40 million downloads or whatever. And there's like 15,000 tools and 400,000 containerized apps. I'm picking numbers out that seem like they're right, but I'm not actually quoting anybody here. We're talking ridiculous growth. Is there a danger that it can collapse under its own weight, or that it can run so fast that it burns itself out as a company or a project, or is there no such thing? Is that all goodness when it comes to growing the company and the brand and the community?
Those risks are absolutely still there. Every organization in this type of situation is one bad release, one key architecture decision away from losing it all. That's a serious risk that they have. So.
Yeah, right, right.
I'm one bad tweet away from losing a job, and Mark, you will be too. So, these are things that are serious risks, Nigel. There's no, they have a lot of money, but then, if the money stops or if some decision is made that puts that wall in place, everything could come to a spectacular end.
So another big risk would be interoperability issues. As people try to, expand and use different elements. So by having a common container, whatever this OCP thing is about, they can put some of the interoperability problems to bed.
Yeah, and I see that, but I wonder if sometimes that's a double-edged sword, right? I sort of hinted that the Open Container Project is almost like a standards body, but I didn't really want to call it that because, I don't know, it always seems to me like standards bodies like T10 or something like that just stifles innovation. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know, if you look at the I forget what OVF
right,
even
so it's
stands.
Not a standards, it's not a standards thing though, right? They're just trying to make it common within the industry, and they're not going to any of the standards bodies, are they? I mean,
No.
So it's gonna be under the auspices of the Linux Foundation, but that doesn't mean it's just gonna be Linux. I think they're just talking to those guys for kind of like, hey, how do we go about running an open standard here. But I was just a bit concerned that it might in some way stifle a little bit of innovation if you're trying to, you've got a lot of different vendors at the table there that you listed off there earlier, Mark, and they've all got their own unique requirements and things that their customers want. And if they're all trying to pull the project or the standard or whatever we want to call it in their own direction, is that just going to be, I don't know, something really difficult that slows development of the product down?
Yeah, there could be things. I think the biggest thing they need is an evangelista named Nigel Poulsen. And then we could have three evangelistas or four, you know, however many. We could all be evangelists on this show. But you should think about doing that, Nigel.
Yeah.
It'd be great.
I like what I'm doing at the moment, at home in my home office all the time, talking to myself, recording courses. Yeah.
But you're reading books. You're talking to yourself, reading books, going to the gym, you know, driving around, reading, you know, listening to – not reading, but listening.
Yeah. Anyway, so should we talk about NetApp real quick? Because we've given them a hard time in the past, and we gave them a lot of love on the show last week. It seems like, right, they are finally arriving at the all-flash array party. But I don't know, in an interesting way, in my opinion. So they've got an all-flash E-series. They are going to have or have got an all-flash FAS, which they've apparently just, like, obliterated the street price on in a competitive way. I think I saw numbers like 40, 50% reductions on the street price. But... okay, they've got a third product in this all-flash array space, the FlashRay, based on the Mars OS. So they're kind of gone from, at least in my view, okay, right, not really having a proper story in that space, to saying, we've got an EMC-like story, if I can say that, you know, where they've got like just almost a ridiculous number of products in there. It seems like they're aiming the E-series to compete with the likes of the dragsters like Extreme IO and people like that. The all-flash array version of the FAS to compete in that traditional enterprise space. And then FlashRay, the Mars stuff, they're, you know, squarely from what I've read, are lining it up against Pure Storage.
Well, it certainly seems like it's something that was within their scope to do. And if they've done it, good for them. I mean, that's...
yeah, it's about time. I mean, they've got a great software stack. They've got a great software stack. This is kind of what they were missing.
Yeah.
And you can't help but wonder what has taken so long. It's great for them if they haven't. And, you know, what you don't know is if this stuff is fleshed out yet and everything. But considering you know, the size of the engineering team there and the experience they have in the industry, they should be able to do some of these things very well, if not all of them.
Yeah, well, they've seriously thrown their name into the hat now, at least. No doubt in your role at Tejal, Mark, you're probably going to be coming across them. I would imagine the all-flash FAS, but potentially that FlashRay that's based on their Mars OS. I don't know a great deal about it, but of all the three products, that's the one that I would be personally the most interested in, especially considering they seem to be pitching it up against Pure. You know, it's a relatively modern architecture. I'm assuming it's going to be dual controller when they do ship it. But that one's one that, I don't know, could be pretty interesting.
You know, we talked about it before. Right now, if there's a feeding frenzy going on around NetApp accounts, and this has been happening for some time, so NetApp understands this, and they know who they're losing deals to, what the size of those deals are, how important they are to them. And, you know, I'm sure the response came back from, you know, sales and marketing into engineering is like, we have to do something about this. You know, people aren't buying us just because we don't have a product that doesn't directly compete, you know, with Pure, with Nimble, you know, with these other people. And so, okay, they had to do it.
Here it is, finally.
All right, then. So let's switch gears onto a bit of business news then. So I've got four things here. NetApp. Red Hat seem to be doing pretty good business at the moment. Now, we have talked about this in the past, about how hard it potentially is to make money as an open source company. Red Hat have been in the news recently, I think, double-digit year-on-year growth. Maybe worth talking about that in a second. Another company coming out of stealth, at least, I think, it's the first I've heard of them, Comprise with a K. They've raised $6 million in a Series A round of funding. And it looks to me, at least, like they want to pitch it out against the likes of Rubrik and Primary Data. Pure Storage have announced a new chief marketing officer, Jonathan Martin, coming from where else other than EMC. And yeah, I said I had four items. I don't actually. I've only got three, so that's the lot for business news.
You had one more. The fourth one is that you had a FYI that Docker is valued at $3.5 billion.
Yeah, but you know what? I just Googled valuation of Docker before we started the podcast, and all I could get was that it was valued at around $1 billion on its last round of funding. And I'm just wondering whether or not the $3.5 billion valuation that I've got in the notes there comes from a conversation I've had with Gabriel.
Or you're looking at the Levi's brand of pants, one of the two.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that Gabriel's not trustworthy, but I don't think I've got anything to back that up. So I'm not gonna really lead much on that one. But on the Red Hat thing, right? So Red Hat have announced double-digit year-on-year growth, right? But this is what I thought was interesting from us, or from our perspective, because we've talked about it in the past, is that subscription fees were just like the uber earner for NetApp. And 75% of their subscription fees come through the channel and 25% from direct sales. And apparently a big old chunk from government as well. And then they also were saying that OpenStack, so all the investments that they've made in OpenStack at the moment, not quite paying for itself right now. They're saying that a lot of people are still just testing. So I'm guessing that the kind of accounts that Red Hat sell into are not the Walmart Labs and people like that that build and, you know, drive their own OpenStack distros and all that kind of jazz. So it seems like, yes, they've invested heavily in OpenStack, but most of their customers really aren't deploying it in anger in production yet. But they caveated that by saying, you know, potentially this year, their investment in OpenStack might start making some paybacks. Which I thought was all kind of interesting. You know, we've talked about open source and where does the money come from there. And we've talked a bunch as well about, is OpenStack a viable business? Well, Red Hat are one of the big contributors and one of the big investors in OpenStack. They're not making money off of it yet, but they do anticipate to do so, and maybe later on this year. Interesting.
That's a fascinating thing to think about. It never occurred to me to think about what the impact OpenStack was having on Red Hat.
Yeah.
I mean, that could be a very scary thing for them.
Yeah,
right? OpenStack could just bypass, you know, their whole, you know, shebang.
Yeah, and I think they've done a fairly decent job, at least in their messaging as well, around, look, we're investing in OpenStack, and they're wanting RHEL, their Red Hat Enterprise Linux flavor of Linux distro, whatever you want to call it, be a solid foundation to build OpenStack on top of. And I do wonder whether if you're an enterprise and you're looking to deploy OpenStack, they are probably a safe bet to partner with. I mean, they've got the heritage with Linux and what have you. They have invested significant numbers of people. You know, if you look at the number of commits that they make to OpenStack, they're up there with, you know, a lot of the high committers. And, yeah, I'd say if I was wanting to dabble my toes in the OpenStack water, I'd certainly entertain talking to Red Hat.
Yeah, I would too. And I think Red Hat's going to be fine, right? One of the reasons why enterprises like Red Hat is because they have excellent controlled releases. You know, the product's very well tested for enterprise environments. And, you know, Red Hat's dialed up for enterprise deployments. And if they can do the same thing with OpenStack, dare I say, you know, extensions or OpenStack implementations, you know, around RHEL, I think they're going to be good. I think they're going to be golden.
Yeah, and the support, right? The supportability is the next step. They can meet enterprise support SLAs and all that, so they'll be fine.
Yeah, who knows? It might even be a great growth business for them. You know, there's a lot to get your arms around with OpenStack. We all know that. If they can do that, though, they would probably help move OpenStack deployments in large enterprises. Right. So yeah, there's a great opportunity for them to do that.
Yeah, they've got that enterprise heritage, don't they? That they're trusted by probably most enterprises. And there's not going to be an enterprise out there that's worried about Red Hat disappearing overnight and leaving them up the creek without a paddle, as we'd say.
No, enterprises have come to depend on Red Hat for very reliable Linux kernels and a lot more, and a lot of the add-ons that they need in those environments. So, you know, I guess after thinking about it for like 15 seconds or something, it seems like it'd be a great fit. And it also seems likely that, yeah, it would lag a little bit, right? You're not going to see, you know, you're not going to see these large corporate environments, you know, these behemoths move as fast into OpenStack as, you know, Walmart Labs or something like that. But they probably will.
Yeah, I know that Gabriel, when he came out of the OpenStack Summit just a few weeks ago, he seemed to be really pumped on the idea that the next 12 months might be really, really critical for OpenStack deployments in that kind of a market. Now, it's easy for me to say that without Gabriel being here, but that was really that was the gist that I got from Gabriel, because I think we all know that some of the early adopters, these Walmart labs and people, that they're already doing it, but we're still really waiting for, I don't know, like a mass of enterprises to start the ball rolling and picking up.
Well, you know, you need the whole spectrum. You need, you know, the dentist office, the enterprise, the mid-sized corporation, and the, you know, the retail mom and pop store. You need everybody doing it.
Hey, so switching on to Comprise, do either of you guys know anything about Comprise?
No.
No, it's got a funny spelling, though, you just told us.
Yeah, Comprise with a K. I mean, I don't know. We're always going on about different names of startups that are coming out recently. I don't know. Is it just because it's hard to find a decent domain name these days? I don't know. But they're entering what I know some of us think is at least a very interesting space. I do wonder whether it's the right time for it. Yeah, I don't know. But it looks to me like they're going to be competing with the likes of Rubrik and Primary Data. Who knows? Maybe even Hedvig, who we talked about a few weeks ago, where they're trying to, like, I don't know, help us manage our unstructured data. So like a software-only solution that's going to solve all of our unstructured data headaches, apparently. Certainly a one to watch, but they've only got 6 million in a Series A at the moment, and I really don't think that competes with the likes of Primary and Rubrik and Hedvig that we've talked about.
City.
Yeah, there's another one, right? So yeah. That's a space that's hotting up a lot at the moment. But you know what? Personally, I'm not sold on. I don't know. I wonder whether it's going to be a flop of a space. It seems like such a great thing, right? We'd all love our unstructured data and all that kind of stuff to be managed better, get proper analytics on it and what have you. But that is a big, big cherry to try and bite off.
Oh, I agree. Data management, in particular, the data analytics, you know, it's really difficult to make one rule or, you know, make a tool that can apply to all rules. So I think it's definitely a space to watch, but I watch this larger space very closely. I've not, you know, looked up Comprise very much, but the takeaway is right now we're at the crux of literally explosive data. And right on Comprise's page, data management to handle the massive scale of data growth. That's so true. We're at the right time because, you know, so many entities of all types are going to have size and content type explosions that they won't know what to do with. And there will be a market on managing that. What that'll look like, I don't know, but you're going to see a lot of things come up to try to help with that. I kind of think of data gravity, you know, myself, but that's different because it's the whole package. But, you know, that's one way that we can look at these data management approaches. But, you know, we have to see how it plays.
My take on it is actually they've got just as good a chance as anybody else, and 6 million doesn't seem like a lot compared to like 50 million or something. But they probably couldn't use 20 million if they had it right now, right?
Okay.
So you know it'll be interesting to see somebody coming from Champaign. I'm just looking at this too, but they might have a very good idea, and they might have a good, you know, actually for the stage that they're at for.
A screenshot. A-round. They've got a screenshot. That's where. Yeah,
I was going to say, as a business for an A round, 6 million is a pretty decent A round.
Uh-huh.
Right. It's a good A round, and you know they might just need to get legs and get a few customers using it, and then you will find out that their next round is going to be, you know, 20 or 30 or something like that. Right.
Yeah. The second round is the one to really kind of watch, because I think you're right, Mark. I think it's a small org right now. Good luck finding details, but. You know, I think that you're right. They probably couldn't use that much more than 6. Maybe they're getting some money. Maybe they have some money of their own, seed money, that type of thing. But 6 million is still a lot of money.
Yeah. What I do know is it's not enough to hire Mark as their evangelista.
No, not even 10% of the way there.
They're too late anyway. They're too late. I am shackled up to Tejile right now.
100 million minimum.
But, you know, I'll tell you what my fear is about this whole market or potential market here in data management. Do you guys remember products like EMC Control Center? And I'm not having a dig at EMC here, but this whole, like, storage management, like, hideous, hideous app that was going to manage all of this heterogeneous storage backups. It was built on SMIS and all that kind of jazz, and it cost like an arm and a leg to license, and it needed half of the compute power of Amazon Web Services just to run at a decent speed, and it just never worked. They were kind of almost, the idea was great, but trying to, the actual implementation specifics and all that was just too much. And I just wonder whether that will be the case here with all of these startups around data management. We'd all love for them to work and to solve our woes, but man, that is no mean feat.
So one of the ways that Comprise can evolve over time, right, is they may find that once they start talking to customers that their message, their intent, their go-to-market strategy and everything becomes much more narrow, and they focus on, you know, a particular application area or, you know, type, you know, maybe, you know, it could be about Excel. It could be, Excel or financial data. It could be about, you know, some other industry. Who knows? Who knows where they're going to go? But $6 million is a lot for an A round. And it's a very healthy A round. And so hats off to them. You know, I hope they're ready to, you know, run like hell and figure out what to do next.
Cool. Well, good luck to Comprise. And on that note, I think we'll call it a day for this week.